Good afternoon and welcome to the Green Thumb Show. I'm Lee Murray, your reader for Sun Sounds of Arizona. Thanks for joining us. From the Arizona Republic, Holiday Greenery, Care and Cautions for Popular Winter Plants by Maureen McCulloch. During the holidays, you can find many live flowering plants just about everywhere. Greenhouses, floral shops, big box stores, and grocery store floral departments. Deciding on the right selection requires careful consideration. Three key questions are who, what, and where. First, who are you purchasing this plant for, yourself or as a gift? Are there children and or pets in the home? Next, what should you purchase? Your options include holiday favorites such as amaryllis, paper whites, Christmas cactus, cyclamen, calancho, and Norfolk Island pines, to name a few. And don't forget everyone's favorite, poinsettias. Last but not least, and probably the most important, where will the plant live? Is there space available with the right environmental conditions, such as light and temperature? For instance, a Norfolk Island pine will require ample room to grow and has its own unique light, temperature, and moisture needs. Here's a detailed review of some of the most common holiday plants. First, amaryllis and paper whites. These two flowering plants are usually one-season bulbs, although with a little work, you can get an amaryllis to bloom again. They can be sold already potted or as a packaged bulb. In the second case, you will need to purchase a growing medium for the bulbs and a planter. Paper whites can be grown in just water. Amaryllis come in many colors, while paper whites are, well, white. These two plants are fun to watch as they grow. Engage children in the process, as it is an excellent example of nature in progress. Care is easy with medium light and temperature, keeping them out of full sun once they begin to bloom. Water when the top inch of soil is dry and rotate to keep the flowers from leaning toward the light source. Paper whites are a one-season flower, but if you choose to keep your amaryllis and attempt a rebloom, cut the spent flowers from the stem and then cut the stem back to the bulb when it begins to sag. Continue to water and fertilize through the summer. When the leaves begin to yellow in the fall, cut them back again to 2 inches above the bulb and remove the bulb from the soil. Clean it and place it in a cool, 40 to 50 degrees, dry and dark space for about 6 weeks. About 8 weeks before you want your amaryllis to bloom, replant the bulb as you did the first year. Amaryllis bulbs can be regrown for at least 20 years or more if they are properly tended. Christmas cactus is next. All holiday cacti are native to Brazil, and depending on the variety, the plant may bloom at Christmas, Easter, or Thanksgiving. Holiday cacti come in a variety of bloom colors. Because they are native to tropical regions, not the desert, they require more watering than true cacti. Plants should be located in bright indirect or dappled sunlight and watered like most other houseplants when the top third of the soil is dry. Feed during the blooming period. Holiday cacti blooms are triggered by long cool nights and will require between 14 to 16 hours of uninterrupted darkness and 8 hours of daylight for 3 to 6 weeks to set flower buds. Calancho is next. Calancho is a drought-resistant succulent from the Madagascar region of Africa. Provide bright, indirect light for at least 6 to 8 hours a day and allow the soil to dry out between waterings. Deadheading will encourage additional blooms, and once flowering is finished in the fall and winter, place the plant in total darkness for 14 hours a day for 6 weeks. This will prompt the plant to start to rebloom again in the spring. Calancho is an easy-to-grow houseplant and can bloom for years. Calancho are not heavy feeders, but should be fed monthly in spring and summer. Cyclamen. Most cyclamens come from the Mediterranean and thrive in a cool, bright spot. Keep them out of direct sunlight and keep the soil moist. Deadheading will encourage more flowering. Once the plant stops blooming and the leaves start to yellow at about 8 weeks, let it go dormant over the summer, reducing watering and light. Move the plant back into a brighter spot in the fall and resume watering. Feed during the blooming period. Poinsettia. Native to the tropical areas of southern Mexico and Guatemala, poinsettias are the number one Christmas gift plant. With ideal environmental conditions, newer cultivars usually hold their flowers, which are not true flowers but modified leaves called bracts, for several months instead of just a few days or weeks. Keep the plant out of drafts and direct sun and water thoroughly once the soil starts to feel dry, but don't allow the plant to sit in water. Most people discard the plant once it has finished blooming. However, with little effort, reblooming can be accomplished. Once the flowers have faded, reduce watering and move the plant to a cool space between 55 and 60 degrees. A garage may be ideal. In March or April, trim the plant back 4 to 6 inches above the soil, keeping a few leaves. The plant can be placed outside during the summer in indirect light, feeding monthly. In early September, move the plant back indoors and around the end of the month to complete darkness from 5 p.m. to 8 a.m. each night, and to a sunny window each day until color begins to appear in the bracts around Thanksgiving, keeping the temperature between 60 and 70 degrees. Norfolk Island Pine. A native to Norfolk Island in the South Pacific, the Norfolk Island Pine is an evergreen houseplant. It can grow up to 9 feet if kept in bright indirect light in a cooler 65 degrees Fahrenheit environment. It will adapt to the warmer, dry conditions found in most homes and offices, but should be watered regularly, avoiding soggy soil, and fed weekly or biweekly from spring to fall, mist in winter. Use caution in making selections. Many houseplants are poisonous or toxic to people and pets when ingested, and holiday houseplants are no exception. Amaryllis bulbs, paperwhite bulbs, cyclamen, calancho, mistletoe, and holly are all poisonous when consumed by cats, dogs, and humans. While poinsettias, Christmas cactus, and Norfolk Island pines are not quite as poisonous, they are mildly toxic to pets and humans, causing adverse reactions. Keep houseplants and fertilizers out of the reach of your pets and children, and seek appropriate medical advice in the event of accidental ingestion. And if you're looking for things to do this holiday season, don't forget the annual tradition of Las Noches de las Luminarias at Desert Botanical Garden. The garden will be aglow this holiday season. Join us for glowing Luminaria-lit trails, twinkling holiday lights, musical performances, entertainment, and festive food and drinks. This year, the garden is thrilled to offer an even brighter spectacle with Light Bloom by Habakuso, where nature and light unite in stunning geometric brilliance. Gather your loved ones and make unforgettable holiday memories at the garden. And here are some things to know before you go. Please enter at your ticketed time. Advance reservations are required, and entry times have limited capacity. The last guest admission is 8 p.m. Parking is complimentary. Please allow extra time to park and enter at your designated time. The garden parking lot can get busy. Carpool or rideshare is recommended and offers curbside drop-off. Patio Cafe and Gertrude's Restaurant offer several dining options. Advance reservations are recommended for Gertrude's. Bars offering a variety of holiday drinks are available throughout the garden and accept debit and credit only. Garden shop is open until 10 p.m. Members receive a 10% discount upon presentation of a valid membership card at checkout. And electric scooters and wheelchairs can be rented at the SRP Visitor Center on a first-come, first-served basis. Las Noches de las Luminarias will run through December 23rd and then again from the 26th through the 30th. Times of operation, 5:30 to 9:30 p.m. Price for adult members, $36.95. General admission, $41.95. For children, members, $14.95. General admission, $16.95. And if you'd like to know more, go to the website dbg.org or email contact@dbg.org. Here's an article from the UK-based publication called House and Garden, A Gardener's Guide to Appreciating the Christmas Season. Matthew Fort reflects on the beauty of Christmas for gardeners with recommendations for fail-safe presents for any gardeners in your life. Christmas is coming, the season of good cheer and trees bedecked with winking lights of mince pies and brandy butter, the holly and the ivy, carols and mulled claret, snow and toboggans, and turkeys and geese getting fat and all the other Yuletide symbols bequeathed us by our Victorian forebears. Those sentimental Victorians, they have a lot to answer for. The turkeys and geese might have been getting fat had it not been for avian flu, a clear portent of our globalized world. Still, I find it hard to take a Scrooge-like attitude. I like Christmas. I love its enthusiastic overindulgence, its enforced jollity, its relentless bling, its good-natured cheer, its foods and fancies. Christmas is a tricky time for veg gardeners. Usually it's cold and wet and miserable, and there's not much to do except tidy up and dream of warmer times. Except that these days you're not supposed to do that much tidying up so that hedgehogs, wood mice, and benevolent insects can take shelter. That suits me fine. Leaving leaves and dead vegetation to gradually rot down and add their nutritious qualities to the earth makes environmental sense to me and suits my fundamentally slothful character. Oh, I know you can do all manner of things, cleaning your tools, wrapping delicate fruit trees against the chill, potting up and sorting out and generally busy bodying about, but that isn't my way. Well, that just leaves unloading the compost heaps. My brother Tom once said that if he could be reincarnated in any form, it would be as a compost heap. This produced universal mockery, but I quite understood his point of view. Useful, warm, inert, that's a compost heap, and there's something wonderfully satisfying in the way waste material is converted into something useful. And so, having dug out the compost and spread it evenly upon my veg beds, I repair to the armchair by the fire and reward my good works with a cup of tea and a plate of buttered crumpets and dream of Christmas. In true Christmas spirit, I'd like to point out the gifts a gardener can give to their family and friends. One shelf in my larder is growing under the weight of pots of jams, raspberry, blackberry jelly, Quinn's jelly, blackcurrant jelly, chutneys, Quinn's once again, green tomato, pickles, cheese, Quinn's yet again, and the like, testament to all the surplus produce, each of which makes a splendid stocking filler or even a Christmas token, particularly if you take a bit of trouble gussying up the label. That always makes people feel you've made an effort for them rather than just recycling your surplus. Last Christmas, I bought myself one of those smart Japanese Nowaki tripod ladders made of aluminum. It was splendid in every way, strong, steady, sensible, impressive. Except it was massive, much too big and heavy for my purpose. I'd been seduced into investing in this monster by a pal of mine who has a very large garden with very high yew hedges and on their garden fancy work, and the 3-meter model suited him very well. In my much smaller garden without the yew hedges and other fancy work with other uneven lawn topography, it didn't really work. After a few outings, when I lurched around the place with my aluminum behemoth to do some winter pruning with some sadness, I put it in the garage, where it remains to this day, waiting for some bolder spirit to take it on. And that's what comes of buying your own Christmas presents. And now from Hearth and Vine, Christmas Plant Lore, Legendary Holiday Stories by Patty Estep. As you may know, a legend, according to Webster's Dictionary, is a story from the past that is believed by many people but cannot be proved to be true. It is no surprise that many legends have been told about Christmas. Some very special stories have been handed down through the years about plants and their association with the birth of Christ. Rosemary symbolism. One of the most revered plants, often thought of as the Christmas herb, is rosemary. The symbol of remembrance, rosemary is a native plant to the Holy Land, where it grows in very large hedges. One legend says that the rosemary plant grows to a height of 6 feet in 33 years, the height and life of Christ. Another tells of the Holy Family and their flight to Egypt. The family stopped to rest by a stream next to a large, white, and flowering rosemary bush. Joseph placed Mary's blue cloak across the bush. When Mary awoke, she washed the baby's clothes in the stream and laid them to dry across the aromatic rosemary. Once the clothes were dry and had been removed, the white flowers had forever changed to the soft blue of Mary's cloak. The Christmas rose. Many herbs honor the Christmas season as their time to flower. Some believe that rosemary blooms on January 6th, the Epiphany, when Jesus was presented to the three wise men. Christmas rose blooms only at Christmas time in Central Europe during the depths of winter. The Christmas cactus, which also blooms during the season, is commonly used as a Christmas tree in hot climates. Poinsettia plants. In Mexico, the legend of the poinsettia states that a poor girl was on her way to Christmas Eve Mass. She had nothing to bring to baby Jesus, so she picked some weeds along the side of the road. When she arrived at the church, the plants had burst into beautiful, star-like red blooms. Evergreens and Christmas. Evergreen plants are also commonly associated with Christmas. The most obvious is the Christmas tree itself, which dates back to 15th century Germany. Their ability to survive in the coldest of regions has made them a symbol of immortality in many cultures. Holly, a legend says, sprang from the footprints of Christ as he walked the earth. In addition, the sharp leaves symbolize Jesus' thorny crown and the red berries his blood. The juniper was said to be one of the friendly plants that the Holy Family met on the long road from Bethlehem to Egypt. With Herod's soldiers close behind, Joseph was looking for a safe place to hide his family when a large juniper opened its branches and beckoned them inside to soft, fragrant safety. These and many other legends of Christmas plant lore have been passed on from generation to generation. They remind us of the meaning of Christmas and help us share in the history of people who have celebrated this special holiday over the years. Here's a story that was written by Christine Johnson called Winter Gardening. We gather with Mr. Schultz in the wrought iron fenced front courtyard of our building 7 minutes after midnight. With little grass but edged garden beds, there are plenty of spots for Mr. Schultz's New Year's dig. I do not bring my midnight sip champagne out of respect for this man I have come to care for deeply over the last 36 hours. Others do. Cocktails, mocktails, wine. Even though I know several are drunk, the group tempers its celebrating out loud. Marina debuts her faux white fur jacket, a gift from a pleased client who now has his tastefully minimalist and masculine house back after his divorce. The shovel rests in my hands, waiting for Mr. Schultz's direction. I had only the opportunity to meet Mr. Schultz once before, talking with him yesterday. He moved in to the first floor apartment in August after it had sat vacant for 6 months. I helped him carry in his kitchen dishes and table linens as his sons directed me where to put the boxes. Mr. Schultz's puppy dog eyes told me without words, "Thank you," and "I am sorry for their behavior." His eyes also looked sad, troubled, but with his sons dictating the apartment arrangements as if HGTV would be stopping by to bestow a tidying up title on them, I left without a proper introduction. I hoped I would get a chance. I love where I live. A big old building that was once a library, then a community center, now converted into 8 apartments. I met my neighbors early on in my tenure as resident of the Minty, named after the closed peppermint candy factory 1 block west. I moved here almost 7 years ago, a college grad with independence on my mind, but without the finances to match. Mrs. Schuster, the landlady who lives in a small white bungalow across the street, had a soft part in her heart for my story, a suffering college graduate ready to earn money and make a difference in society, but lacking the work experience to afford a clean and safe living space on my own. For the first 2 years, she gave me a discount on my rent for the weekly cleaning of the common areas, the entryway, a small lounge on the 3rd floor, and the laundry room in the basement. Grateful for my adopted family here, I still clean the rooms, proud of our community. It was in the laundry room yesterday that I ran into Mr. Schultz, crying. "Oh, Mr. Schultz, what is upsetting you?" I asked before realizing he did not recognize me. "I'm Anna from Unit E, 3rd floor. He nodded as if he remembered me, even though I don't think he did. He stood in front of the utility sink cleaning dried dirt off of a hoe. "Getting ready for some December gardening?" I joked. While all of the major snow systems has missed the area so far this winter, the rousing 26-degree temperature did not invite winter gardening. He sobbed harder. "I am sorry for my lack of composure," he tried to snap back at me, but his kind voice wouldn't let him. "Yes, yes, I am the crazy fool who will be out gardening, as you call it, tomorrow night." Gardening at night on New Year's Eve during winter? Maybe you know something I don't about the right time to sow seeds, I spoke lightly, trying to lighten his mood. He lifted his gaze from the sink and with a slight smile said, Not quite. Removing his smooth, weathered brown wallet from his pocket, he pulled out two photographs of women, one in black and white and one in color. Both women wore wedding attire, one in a simple gown with a pillbox hat and lace veil, the other in a cream suit carrying a bouquet of red roses. Why I dig in winter, he whispered as he traced the edges of the photographs with his scaled fingers. Pointing at the black and white picture, Mr. Schultz began, This is my Peggy, my first wife and the joy of my soul. We were married for nearly 40 years. She gave me two handsome, sturdy, and reliable boys. She got the cancer of the lady parts and died a year later. His gaze moved to the other picture. This is my Linny, Belinda, to everyone else. I met her 5 years after Peggy died at bingo and burgers night at my church. She was the number caller. She sparkled with all her jewelry, had voice so loud it echoed in the rec hall, and wore a cowboy hat and boots. Mr. Schultz paused. We married 5 weeks later at the courthouse. Really upset the boys, but Linny liked my spunk, as she put it, and I needed her spontaneity and laughter in my life. He labored that both women should have outlived him, especially his second wife, who was 10 years younger and an avid runner. Linny was struck by a car while opening their mailbox. She died on the street in front of the house. My sons thought I was lost in my house, so they convinced me to sell it and move here, he proclaimed, waved his arms in frustration. I now live halfway between them and see them less than when I lived an hour and a half away. A lonely man during the loneliest time of the year. With my unofficial title as a community keeper, I realized my only goal until the end of the year, get Mr. Schultz to attend Marina's New Year's Eve party. A top interior designer and event planner extraordinaire, Marina throws a fabulous New Year's Eve party where every year she somehow gets attendees to forget preconceived biases and attitudes and celebrate the passing of time as a community of friends. When I asked Mr. Schultz if he had received Marina's foil-embossed invitation to the bash, he shook his head yes, but said he would not attend. He would have his traditional one Budweiser and some supper and spend a few minutes gardening before hopefully falling asleep to the sound of the late, late news. Well, at least come for dinner. You will not be disappointed. Marina's caterer puts together a spread that rivals any party in the area. You can leave with plenty of time to do what you need to do. Mr. Schultz picked up his tools and headed for the door. I'll think about it. Now, if you will excuse me, I need to get back to my apartment. 10 o'clock the next morning, I rapped lightly on his door to hear his decision. Mr. Schultz opened the door, looking dapper in his brown slacks, dress shirt, and plaid vest, and tweed sport coat, his feet covered with high polished brown leather shoes. You look great, Mr. Schultz. Are you going somewhere? I asked as he modeled his attire for me. I will go to that party if you will help me with something. He paused. Please listen and do not laugh. It may sound out of sorts for you of the younger generation, but for me and my family, traditions are as serious as the childbirth. They both must happen. He shared a story of feasting as a young boy on New Year's Eve 1 year, only to have mere morsels the next year. His mother, a woman of great mind and devoted spirit, refused to let their lack of food ruin their holiday celebrations. At New Year's Eve dinner, she asked all 8 at the dining table to leave at least one bite of their ham sandwich on their plates. She had made the Christmas ham last all the way to December 31st and wanted to celebrate the family's ability to live frugally but keep the holidays merry and Christ-centered. I had no idea why she wanted us to leave one bite. I did as I was told and left one bite, mostly crust and a slim shaving of ham, Mr. Schultz shared proudly as if his mother was listening. At 11:45, his mother summoned the household to put on their coats and boots and meet her at the front door. Since we never argued with Mama's requests, we all did it. She ordered her family out into the front yard, where they saw a lantern illuminating the frozen and frosted row of hibernating rose plants, a massive shovel laying next to a freshly dug hole between the plants. I immediately thought the cat had died because, well, he was old and ate our table droppings and garbage and was fat, Mr. Schultz shared in a young child's voice. I was beginning to see the curtain rise over his outward stone demeanor, revealing a lighter and more jovial man. Holding the lantern over the hole, his mom showed the family the ham sandwich bites laying at the bottom of the pit. After leading them in prayer, she covered the whole, chanting a line in Irish from an old folk tale. When she finished, she announced their offering would ensure them enough food for the rest of their lives. How she knew this, I have no clue, but our family was blessed with enough food each year, Mr. Schultz remembered. Both Peggy and I and Linny and I made hams on Christmas and saved enough for New Year's Eve sandwiches, always leaving one bite. My sons helped me carry on the last 2 years, but neither one could come tonight. His eyes looked heavy again. Anna, if I go to the party, can you help me keep the tradition alive? I suddenly felt like I was talking to a member of my own family, so terrified that losing a ritual might kill them. Heck yeah, I was in. Mr. Schultz handed me a shovel and gave instructions. He asked if I could pick him up at 8. I texted the Minty crew via group chat the entire story and asked them to simply follow Mr. Schultz's lead right after midnight. Mr. Schultz made it clear that he did not want to ask anyone to give up their midnight celebration, so after midnight worked as well. I have to admit, Peggy and I were late a couple of years, Mr. Schultz confessed. Being an agreeable and adventurous crew, all of the tenants were thrilled with the end-of-year surprise. I escorted Mr. Schultz, carrying his ham sandwich in a Ziploc, to Marina's apartment a few minutes after 8. Marina, in her infinite hosting wisdom and charm, had a discreet but stunning blue porcelain china plate on a table to the left of the door for his sandwich. Within 10 minutes, Marina made introductions and provided Mr. Schultz with a succinct and humorous bio of everyone in attendance. "Better watch out for Harris over there," she joked with Mr. Schultz. "He's got enough stories about his travel adventures to keep you busy until New Year's next year." At 12:02, Mr. Schultz gestured to me that it was time. I motioned to Marina to gather everyone. Mr. Schultz and I led the procession down to the front yard. With a nod of his head, I break through the ground on the first try. Thanks to the light winter and an abundance of rain during the previous year, the ground is still soft enough to dig a hole. I stop digging about 6 inches in. Mr. Schultz pulls a folded napkin from his pocket. He removes the last bite of his ham sandwich and places it in the hole. He closes his eyes and pauses. Food feeds the body and the soul. May it bring bountiful provisions to everyone this year. I lock my elbow with his and he smiles. "This year looks to be a good one," he says. "Now, take me back to that party. I want to taste some of Marina's creamy brulee and talk with Harris about his photos from Africa." He is an official Minty resident now. And that's the Green Thumb Show for this week. For Sun Sounds Radio, I'm Lee Murray, your reader, wishing all of you a very Merry Christmas and the happiest of holiday seasons. Be safe and healthy, and we'll be talking with you soon.